Welcome to the Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Mos Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
Disney execs are in a panic. They're freaking out about Rogue One. And if you believe the internet, that is. The internet echo chamber is alive and thriving with Star Wars news. But we're here to sort it out for you on the Wretched Hive, episode 12 for Friday, June 10th. 2016, and it's been an interesting week or couple of weeks in Star Wars news, and we're going to sort it all out for you, including updates on Rogue One. We have the winner of our Blu-ray giveaway.
We have a winner.
Wow, do we really?
We do.
Well, I have a winner.
Are you kidding me?
What I get for missing staff meetings.
We got ones of calls. So I think we're going to play all three calls we got on the air tonight.
Whoa. We got three calls?
Three calls.
Hold the phone.
Three. Yep. It's true.
Greg was two of them, right?
It's true. All of it.
Not are we counting the two calls Greg already made?
Oh, okay. All right. We didn't get any calls. No, I'm just kidding. We got three calls. My name is Steve Baldwin, and you can hear the rest of the Hive has joined me tonight. Let me introduce them to you. First off, my good friend and yours, Greg Lent.
Yub Nub Steve, Yub Nub fellow Hivers. Great to be here. Looking forward to another night of hefty Star Wars talk.
Yub Nub, my friend. Also joining us, lifelong Star Wars aficionado, Scott Ivansky.
Thank you, Steve. I said it earlier, pre-podcast. I bleed for the cast. It will be up on the site soon.
You got injured this week, and you literally are bleeding for this show.
Right now, as we speak. I will post the picture.
Okay.
Should probably get that checked out.
Suggests Captain of the Millennial Falcon, Nico Rodriguez.
That's me. I'm Captain of the Millennial Falcon.
Yes, you are, sir.
And you sure about that?
Prove it. Prove it you're the real captain.
14 parsecs.
All right. And last but never least, Dave, do not under any circumstances call him Harry Potter.
Good evening, everybody. And just this isn't a Star Wars trivia question. This is a general film trivia question. What significance does today have in cinema history?
Ooh. So are we talking June 10th, Friday, June 10th, or are we talking as we record?
We're talking live as we record.
Okay, so as we
June
record.
June 10th, 1993, Jurassic Park was released.
What is that? Is that our trivia theme?
Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
Not the real Hive, apparently.
Who is that? Is that Mr. Lent?
That was Lent, yep.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, you're the big winner, Greg.
No kidding. So
thank you. Do I get I want a Star Wars Blu-ray, The Force Awakens DVD, and
nice try. Let me guess the year. We didn't say the year yet. I'm gonna say that was 1984.
It is 1984.
It is 1984.
Kaboom! Wow, that was a good guess, Steve.
And I just have to say, for all the haters out there, for the revival, at least wait to see it before you hate it. You can't prejudge something you haven't seen.
Are there a lot of haters?
Dave? I am going to totally shit all over that movie right now. I don't care what you say.
Are there a lot of haters out there? I haven't seen.
Oh my god, it is the worst reviewed trailer ever in the history of YouTube.
The trailer is less than stellar.
I will agree with you with that.
The trailer ranks right above True Detective.
Oh, you know what, guys? I have a special special segment later
we have a little update on the True Detective and one Matthew McConaughey.
Steve, I thought you were going to say we have a new segment called the Hate Corner.
Oh, well. No, that's the whole show, actually.
Yeah, that's the whole that's show.
We thought about renaming it the Hate Corner, but we're going to stick with Wretched Hive. But no, Matthew McConaughey.
I think I'm sorry, Steve. We're not all haters at the same time, though. We all seem to take our turns in the Hate Corner, so it just depends on who's put there that particular week.
Yes.
Last week it was Scott. This week we're not so sure. Dave, you tried for last week, but Scott wrested it from your angry hands.
Yeah, he pretty much kicked my teeth in on that one.
I would like to share my hate with Dave, because Dave had a great argument, and I love Dave.
I think I'm going to have to produce some background sound effects for the Hate Corner. Yeah, that's going to be a thing. That's funny.
Call it the Hate Pillow.
So,
excuse me, I'm hating right now. I have the Hate Pillow in the circle.
So anyway, yes, 32 years ago today, the original Ghostbusters came into movie theaters, and I do remember actually seeing it opening weekend, not opening night, but opening weekend, and just fantastic. They don't make one-off movies like that anymore, so I just wanted to pause to acknowledge that.
I just want to pause to acknowledge the fact, Millennial Falcon Captain, boom, that movie's older than me.
Whatever.
Can we mute him, please?
But, you know, talking about that movie holds up to this day. That is a great, great movie.
Absolutely one of the top comedies of all time. And I agree with you, Dave, but I also have to say I'm one of those people that actually enjoyed part two. I know it's not as good, but there are some damn funny moments in it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, let's just go back and – I know we talk about Star Wars a lot in this podcast, but let's go back and look at the summer of 1984. Mm. And I just did a real quick Google search, just summer 1984. Ghostbusters, Gremlins, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Karate Kid, Star Trek III, Police Academy all came out the summer of 1984.
Wow.
What the hell,
ouch,
man?
That was a great summer. That was a great year.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow.
I was alive and damn proud to be there.
I was alive too, watching all those films in the theaters.
What a great time to be old.
That was the year I started driving motor vehicles. I was 16 in 1984. Wow, that was a great time. Yeah.
Okay. And what? Now they don't let you drive motor vehicles anymore, right?
It was a Model T. Actually, it's a Model T. All right. Well, you can connect with us. You can find us on Facebook for all the Star Wars or Ghostbusters talk you would like to share with us. Facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. Or you can leave us a voicemail. You know, you may have heard last few shows we've been promoting our voicemail line. That's 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. And guys, last time we talked, I shared that we had not received a call to our voicemail line yet. It had been a couple weeks, and so I put out the call to our listeners to leave a voice message, and they might get it played on the air. And furthermore, they would be in the running to win a Blu-ray DVD digital copy of The Force Awakens. And guys, our listenership stepped up. We got three calls, and I'm going to play all three for you, and I'm going to stay out of this because I have my own opinion here, but I'm going to let you guys decide the winner. All right, is that fair? I'll be the tiebreaker if it's 2-2. How about that?
I like that.
Very much so.
I like it.
All right. So this first voice message comes from our listener, Jamie.
Hi, this is Jamie. I'm a huge fan of The Hive, and I'm calling because I'm hoping to win the DVD. I saw your post on Facebook, and I'm a huge fan of the podcast, and I have a special guest here with me. This is Leia. Far away.
Hello, noble sirs. This is Princess Leia.
I'm here to commend you on your noble work for the Rebel Alliance. I have every faith and confidence that you are continuing the good work of the Force. And I just wanted to say, great job, gentlemen. We need you, and may the Force be with you. And we hope we win the DVD! Thank you!
All right, that was Jamie.
Jamie and Leia, nice.
Jamie and Leia.
Nice. Well done.
Leia sounds like she's aging well.
Actually. Oh, my God.
Says the 26-year-old.
I will be holding the hate pillow for the duration of the recording tonight.
Man.
Scott?
That's hilarious.
Dare you to try to steal it from me?
I will not, sir. I was just waiting for you to say something like space mill for something. I mean, come on.
Smooth 92.
All right, so that was we'll call that's Jamie's contestant number one. Contestant number two is Diana.
Dirty Diana.
Hey, Steve and the rest of you wretched hivers out there. You gotta settle down, Obi-Wan Kenobi. We'll figure out the rest of the universe. The Force will be with him. So calm down. Be waiting to see what else to post later on. It's Diana. Bye.
And there's Diana.
I'm confused. Excellent. About the Obi-Wan talk.
She was definitely speaking to some members of the Hive there.
I don't know what you're talking about. I cannot calm down. That's all I have to say. I cannot calm down, people.
Sir, calm down.
You'll never be a Jedi with that attitude.
No way.
I was never going for it.
Our final entry.
Wait. Can I put money that I think the next caller is Scotty McDonald?
All right. How much money would you like to put down on that one?
That's not fair because you know the answer.
Nico, put all of it down, man.
I was this close. Well, nope. The third caller, our last contestant, is Chris.
Yes, Wretched Hive guys. I have a question for you. Who do you think has been laid more, Han Solo, James Bond, or Jose Vizcaino? That's a question that keeps me up late at night. Could you please address that on your podcast? Thank you.
Ooh, this is a great question.
All right, so I have to explain. Chris. I have to explain the Jose Vizcaino reference. So this is a friend of mine, Chris, and we have this long-running friendship. We've been friends for over 25 years, and for almost that length of time, we've been joking about who gets laid more. Insert blank or Jose Vizcaino. So Jose Vizcaino is a former Major League Baseball player, not an all-star, or he might have been an all-star a few times, but not a Hall of Famer, but a very good baseball player. And we always marvel at how baseball players must get, you know, all kinds of girls. So we always have this sort of like debate, you know, who gets laid more, Han Solo or Jose Vizcaino, or President Obama or Jose Vizcaino, or whoever in Jose. So.
And you could have gone with Rolly Fingers. That dude had the stash, man.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So Phil Negro threw a spitter.
All right. So do we give it to Jamie, Diana, or Chris?
Well, I want to put my two cents in real quick.
Okay.
I liked each one of them. However... as much as I like Diana, she was kind of critical, most likely of the hate part of the group, and I kind of fall into that category. So,
respect the hate pillow.
Respect the hate pillow. That is correct. I am going somewhere between Jamie and Chris, and I don't know. I kind of like Chris. I think I like his question. I like that he threw a question in there.
Okay. All right.
By the way, with Jamie, I thought that that her contribution and throwing Leia into the mix was a nice contribution, and I thank her for her efforts. So I'm going Jamie and Leia.
All right.
They each get one half of a Blu-ray.
All right, Nico?
I'm going to vote that Jose wins this one.
All right. Jose Vizcaino.
Jose Vizcaino.
I will take that as a vote for Chris and Dave.
I will also vote for Jamie. I did like, truthfully, all three calls, but I like the entertainment value of throwing Princess Leia on the line. I would also like to vote, by the way, for James Bond, to answer Chris's question. Well, unless Han Solo has a very different relationship with Chewbacca than I've always imagined.
We did not answer the question at all. No. So, Steve, you explained the question, but we did not answer the question at all. So we owe it to Chris to give him an answer to this question. And I'm going to go Han Solo because he is a freaking space pirate, guys. Captain Kirk ain't got nothing on him.
Yeah, I got to go Han Solo on that one, too. Because he's, you know, he's got a lot of variety going there. He's jumping from planet to planet, system to system. I mean, you know, he's tapping a lot out there, no doubt.
Oh yeah,
no doubt.
Three Han Solos, one James Bond. Nico, give us your irrelevant opinion.
That's what he does every night, Greg.
And the Hate Box Award for this segment of the show goes to
Gregory, you're not holding the hate pillow tonight. Please keep your hate to yourself. Hate is a path to the dark side.
That's right.
I'm going to go ahead and say James Bond because everybody thinks that James Bond. I mean, we just talked about this in the last podcast, right? How many James Bond movies are there now?
25.
Scott?
24,
25, okay. And each one of those, you all think that those are spy movies. They're softcore porn movies that just happen to be about, you know, they toss in some spy stuff and some gadgets. But every single one of those movies, he hooks up with a chick. And are many of them, where there are multiple chicks in the movie. We can only speculate about Han Solo. We know for sure that James Bond is a pimp and a playa, and he's getting it between the sheets.
Nice. Okay.
It wasn't until the 90s that he didn't take down at least three women per movie. For James Bond. It was three women per movie, every movie, until the 90s. Easy.
Yeah. Well, I blame Denise Richards for that.
All right, so this leaves us for our contest here, for our Blu-ray giveaway. We've got two votes for Chris, Scott, and Nico. We've got two votes for Jamie, Greg, and Dave. And I really appreciate that, guys. That means you have left this up to me to break the tie. I happen to know both these folks. Jamie and Chris are both very dear friends. And
Steve's now the bad guy.
We're so grateful that they listen to the show. I have got to go, with all due respect to my buddy Chris, I got to go with Jamie on this one. Jamie, you are the grand prize winner.
Woo!
Of the Blu-ray DVD digital copy of The Force Awakens. I know Jamie has a couple of young boys, and they will love watching this film. So let's give her a hand.
Fantastic.
Well done. Thank you very much. Well done, Jamie.
That's another episode of The Wretched Hive wrapping up in the books. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Just kidding. All right. We've got some other news to cover, and let's get started with Rogue One.
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic.
It's grounded, like a lot of subject views of what it's like to be really in a war in the Star Wars universe.
Attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide.
A rogue band of resistance fighters unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring new hope to the galaxy.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Have you ever seen so much drama about a Star Wars movie in pre-production than Rogue One this week? I mean, you know, we've had a lot of internet rumor mills and leading up to Episode One, there was a lot of talk and a lot of angst, but this week in particular has been so interesting to read the Star Wars news online. And I'm going to start with this article from Page Six, which really was the start of this frenzy about Rogue One and what's happening with that film. The title of this article, "Disney Execs in a Panic
over upcoming Star Wars film. This was posted on May 30th. And this article was the source of the internet echo chamber effect that really kicked off, was repeated, the title of this article repeated over and over by many, many news outlets. I saw it at least five times in just prepping for the show. And so this article about halfway down, there's been so much speculation that the movie will take a darker turn than Darth Vader and that Darth Vader will appear. Page Six exclusively revealed earlier this month that Alden Ehrenreich had landed the coveted part to play young Han Solo. Perhaps he might make an appearance. But it was announced earlier this week, according to this article, which was, of course, now a little bit old, that Rogue One was entering into extensive reshoots, that Disney wouldn't take a backseat, is demanding changes, and the movie just isn't testing well. A Disney source was quoted as saying the filmmaking team and the studio anticipated additional shooting and second unit work to make the film the absolute best it can be, and the actors were aware that there would be additional shooting. So I saw this title of this article. To me, it's just complete clickbait, right? I mean, you can't help but to go and see what's wrong with Rogue One. And so I did a little research on this and was looking back. I found this article from over a year ago. Report, The Force Awakens reshoot details. And it was back in January of 2015 that Star Wars Underworld reported that Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, was entering into reshoots. And I just don't remember it being a big deal at all back then. So I'd like to hear what you guys think of that. Scott, I know you follow the industry quite a bit. What did you think when you saw this headline? Were you concerned? And what have you learned since then?
I think initially, there's many times where I'll see these types of news posts and kind of have just a quick reaction, maybe the overreaction, but thinking about what they're doing, I think there's another movie in the DC universe that's happening right now with Suicide Squad, had some reshoots done soon after Batman versus Superman came out, where a lot of people were saying that due to the way that the overall reception of Batman versus Superman was, that they were trying to lighten up, add some humor to Suicide Squad, which is coming out in August. No, I don't work for Warner's or DC, but hey, just giving them some props. I kind of had the same feeling after the thought. After I saw the reaction was maybe the film was a little bit too dark and they wanted to add some tone to it similar to Episode 7, maybe to lighten it up a little bit. But honestly, reshoots happen all the time in this industry. So, you know, there could have been a moment in the editing room where they're like, hey, we tried to get all the shots we needed and this just didn't have it. We need to go back in and get a couple key moments or maybe some background filler stuff. I just know that kind of stuff happens all the time.
Yeah, so. There were several sources. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, no, I was just going to echo that. Reshoots are practically a way of life now for these big budget tentpole studio productions. They practically build it into the schedule and plan for it. So my first reaction was I don't accept that just because there are reshoots that it's inherently a bad thing or there's a panic or it's a bad product. You know, like you said, they did the exact same thing with Star Wars 7 and everybody just said, oh, that's interesting. It probably means it's going to be a even better film than it was already going to be. Mm-hmm. So this is fine. This is how Hollywood does business these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
they did reshoots on Civil War. There were reshoots on Civil War. Like you said, Dave, every big tentpole movie that they put out there, they schedule reshoots. It's not something that's unheard of at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my initial reaction was, like I said, was almost a little bit of an overreaction because the way that these, especially these internet sites, you know, they're all over the place. There's a couple, I won't name them, but they're on my Facebook feed and their reaction, they want to draw out almost like a shock value reaction out of you. Like Disney execs are not happy. Well, first of all, how did they know this? They don't quote anybody. Their sources are always these vague
no-name sources. And so that the initial shock at the first was like, oh my God, Rogue One's having problems. And then you start to sit back and go, you know what? We talked about, we didn't see a trailer for so long. They're in the middle of shooting. It just happens. It's the way that industry works. So after that initial reaction, after my initial kind of shock and awe moment where there was, you know, it's a movie that's needs the little extra filler that they just didn't get in that initial shooting period. So
my problem with it is that everything, especially because this article came out about a week ago, maybe like 10 days ago now. I mean, it's been out there in the world for a while. My problem with it is that everything referred back to that Page Six article. Mm-hmm. And I just wasn't buying what they were throwing down in the Page Six article. Scott, like I said, there were no sources. They just said, oh, you know, they're going back for reshoots. Disney execs are furious. It hasn't tested well. There's been no screen test of this movie.
Exactly.
So how do they know it hasn't tested well? And with whom did it not test well? So right,
yeah, no, if there had been, you know, test screenings where they just bring people in off the street, and I've been a part of that before. They just grab you off the street. They don't tell you what you're going to see. And you see the, you know, a cut of the movie and you give feedback on it. If that had happened, there would have been – and it was a bad result. There would have been stories all over the place. I guarantee there's no way you keep 200, 300 people quiet about seeing a first cut of a new Star Wars movie and they didn't like it.
Right.
Right.
Correct.
One report I read suggested that two people had seen this movie all the way through the first cut. One was Bob Iger.
Disney, I would hope so.
Disney chairman. And the other was some other executive. I can't remember. It was Disney.
Alan Fine, I think.
Okay. Yes, I think that's correct. In the wake of The Force Awakens, having done so well, what's your sense of the pressure that must be on Gareth Edwards with this film? I mean, my initial thought in seeing the Page Six story was, you know, Disney is expecting no less than perfection, and the pressure just must be enormous.
If Disney's expecting – this is just my opinion. If Disney's expecting mainline Star Wars episode box office numbers out of this, they are setting themselves up for a failure. I don't know that they can forecast what reasonably they can expect from this movie because no one's ever tried to do a standalone Star Wars movie before. I don't think there's any reasonable expectation that it's going to do, you know, Force Awakens numbers. And if I remember right, it's been a long time since I looked at the all-time box office charts, but I think you have, you know, the original Star Wars, then you have Empire Strikes Back, then Force Awakens, and Phantom Menace. Those four as being, you know, like top 20 all-time movies. And then the other two, Revenge of the Sith and Attack of the Clones, are way, way, way down the list, like in the 60s and 70s.
You talking domestic or worldwide, Dave?
Domestic.
Okay.
And I think that this one is a standalone. You got to expect it's going to be down in kind of that lower tier, just because it's not part of the mainline story and there's not the level of anticipation for it. That said, you know, with some of the leaking going around that this movie is going to end basically 10 minutes before A New Hope opens,
right,
which I take it to mean it's going to end with, you know, the Corellian freighter that Princess Leia's on suddenly getting discovered by the Star Destroyer and it opening fire on it. That kind of a tie-in may goose it a little bit. I don't know. I just talked myself in a circle there, but I don't think they can expect, you know, box office records out of this thing.
Well, I want to jump in on that just for a second because you brought up the box office stuff. I do follow the box office reports, kind of like some of my friends that follow football stats. But I want to jump in on something you said. There's never been a standalone Star Wars film. I almost for a second agreed with you, but there was one standalone film which you happened to review in one of our showdowns, The Clone Wars.
I get where you're going with it, and I kind of excluded that in my head from this just because it's a different, to me, it's a different product. It was this animated Star Wars movie. I'm not trying to get into how much I disliked it, but an animated Star Wars movie versus a live-action Star Wars movie, I don't think they're apples to apples.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you on that. I just wanted to throw it out there because
no, good point.
All those films, all six of the original films all did exceptionally well at the box office. If you're going to talk numbers and money, they all did decent. And I know you can say, oh, Attack of the Clones or Empire Strikes Back didn't do as well as the rest of the franchise. But, yeah, you take a look at that one moment where they did the Clone Wars film. It was considered a pretty hefty flop for them. But this is a standalone live-action film that has just generated some serious buzz about it. So
didn't that hefty flop, the Clone Wars, make about $350 million or something?
No. I'm going to look it up right now.
I remember it was a lot more than we had guessed. When
I think domestic, it made close to somewhere between $70 and $90 million.
Okay,
if I'm correct, Dave, you might know that.
Well, Dave looks that up. I want to throw this out there. How many people are going to go see Rogue One thinking it's Episode 8?
You know, I think 20% of the audience.
Yeah. I think it's probably about right. Right? The casual fan that likes, you know, space movies or adventure movies is going, oh, here's the next Star Wars movie. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little bit more than that, Dave. Maybe like 30-40%. But yeah, there's going to be that segment of the audience that's not going to get it.
It's a rare day when I'm accused of having too much faith in humanity.
That is really weird that there are going to be that many people out there who are and it just I don't know if that makes me weird, you know, just knowing this much. It does make me weird knowing this much about Star Wars. I'll admit that. But just thinking that somebody's going to go into this not knowing the backstory of it and just they're just going to go see it just because it's Star Wars. It's crazy.
Yeah. Just that name alone is, I hate to say this, I'm sure Disney is banking on that, just having a Star Wars story attached to it is going to draw in that 20 to 40% of people. And that's going to bring in such huge numbers that opening weekend for it. I still think that movie's going to make a ton of money.
And they're going to be all looking, where's Kylo Ren? Why isn't Kylo Ren in this movie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you have to expect that, especially right now, because even though Star Wars The Force Awakens didn't break the number one spot, it broke so many records. So many records. I mean, seriously, only three films in history have broken $2 billion, and that's one of them.
I'm sorry, Dave. I know you want to jump in here real quick. There was a report just this week that it finally ended its theatrical run just this week.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I saw that, and it ended with something like 936 million domestically in change.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm going to use, for the all-time box office numbers, I like to use the adjusted for inflation numbers because I think those are just more reflective. If you don't adjust for inflation, actually Empire Strikes Back is the lowest grossing episodic Star Wars movie. It made only $290 million at the box office when it was released.
That is, yes.
It's horrible, stupid, slacking movie. But once you adjust it for inflation, it becomes number 13 on the list all time, with a current inflation value of $842 million. So once you adjust for inflation, you have the original Star Wars at $1.5 billion. You have Star Wars The Force Awakens at number 11 with $927 million. You have The Empire Strikes Back at $842. Return of the Jedi, slot number 16, 807, episode 1 at slot 18. So I like to pause there for a minute to note that there are five Star Wars movies in the top 20 all-time adjusted for inflation, just to give perspective on how valuable a franchise this is.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have to scroll way down the list to get to Star Wars Episode 3 at number 63 with 509 adjusted for inflation. And then the lowest grossing is Star Wars Episode 2 at 91 with 458 million. These numbers are all courtesy Box Office Mojo. If you don't like my figures, talk to them.
Right. And I'm going to add to that, Dave, because I'm going to jump in on what you just said. That is all adjusted for inflation. Yep. If you actually take the unadjusted numbers, you're still looking at three Star Wars films in the top 10 domestic films of all time. Force Awakens is the only film that is just shy of $1 billion in its initial run. There's no extra. 936 $1 million. Oh my God, that's insane money right there. And then you're looking at, so that's the number one film. The number, let's see, where did it go here? Seven is Star Wars Episode One at $474 million, and Star Wars A New Hope is at number eight with $460.9 million. That's insane right there.
That is insane. Well, if you're interested in reading more about this, there's a great article on Entertainment Weekly. Anthony Bresnikan is a what I found to be a solid and reliable journalist in terms of Star Wars news. And he is on Entertainment Weekly. Search him out, EW.com, and then search Anthony Bresnikan. And he has always provided a great great reference for Star Wars news, and very good writer as well. So you'll enjoy that. One other piece I wanted to read about this story that I thought was interesting was on Vulture.com. And Vulture.com points out in their article called "No One Should Be Surprised That Star Wars Rogue One Is Having Problems." they point out that Kathleen Kennedy, back in December, in an interview with Slash Film, Slash Film asked Kennedy if Rogue One was a heist film. And she said it is, to a certain extent. What's interesting about that is that Slash Film put out that suggestion, put that suggestion in Kennedy's head, and she merely affirmed it. And now reading from the article, but war movies and heist movies are not the same. Apocalypse Now is a war movie. The Italian Job is a heist movie. The genres tend to widely diverge in tone and temper. In our opening for Rogue One News, Gareth Edwards is talking, and he says it's akin to feeling how a real war would be in the Star Wars universe. So this was planned to be a war movie from the beginning. And so this article is sort of saying, well, you know, he's been making a war movie, and maybe Disney executives were thinking it should be something else, like a heist movie. Surprise, surprise, they're doing reshoots because it has the feel of a war movie. So it's just kind of an interesting take, and that's at Vulture.com. And check that article out. No one should be surprised that Star Wars Rogue One is having problems. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say, no one should be surprised Rogue One is having problems. If they read my blog, Rogue One is having problems, the blog.
Exactly.
Yeah, the feeling that I'm getting about this movie, though, is really more, you know, if you've seen, like there were two movies that came out. One of them actually had Harrison Ford in a supporting role. There was, like, The Guns of Navarone, and then Force 10 from Navarone, I think, was the follow-up that had Harrison Ford in it. They came out in the late 60s, mid-70s, something like that. And they're kind of war heisty movies, you know, where this team goes back behind enemy lines. And this is the kind of movie I got. And there's going to be some adventure, some drama, you know, that kind of thing. So you can have the heist film and you can have the war film, and you can keep it still kind of light in tone as well. This is a genre that's been out there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, I'm excited for it. I will be seeing this movie on the day it opens, or the night before it opens, whenever I can go. Hopefully they'll do a 7 o'clock showing, or when did we see? 10 o'clock or 7 o'clock or something? The day before the official release of The Force Awakens?
There was a 7 p.m. out here in California, so yeah. We all saw most of us.
For episode 7.
Some of, yeah.
Yeah.
One of us, of the five of us, was not present that night. Hmm.
I wonder who that was.
You know why? Because Skype, he couldn't get Skype to work that night.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
Okay. We've left him speechless. Speechless. All right. Well, let's move on. We've got a special segment. Dave, I'm sorry I didn't produce an opening for you, but I'll just go ahead and launch it for you. We've got our first book review. And this week we have Dave, who's going to review Bloodline by Claudia Gray. So I'm going to hand it off to you, Dave. What did you think of the book?
I actually really liked it. And Scott may have some input on this question I wanted to ask. I didn't get an opportunity to research it, but I actually think that Bloodline as a Princess Leia story, I'm wondering if this is the first Princess Leia story written by a woman. I think it is, and I thought that was a very interesting note. But I was kind of wrestling when I was prepping my notes for this on how to, you know, what box do you put this book in? What kind of story is it? And the closest thing I can get for it is that it's akin to an old school Greek tragedy, in that Princess Leia has this dark secret as the successful political figure she is at the time this book takes place. Nobody knows she's Darth Vader's daughter. That is not public knowledge. That is known by her, Luke, Han, and maybe a couple other people. And it's the cover kind of gives away that this is a ticking clock countdown towards that revelation becoming public. And it's the undoing of the successful Senator Leia Organa Solo, who is one of the shining stars and top political figures in this new republic that's emerged after the end of the movie. And I'm not going to give away the exactitudes of how it is or specifically what happens, but just the thing I was struck by was, what if in today's modern political age we had this hugely successful political figure and it came out that they were the grandchild of Hitler at a key moment in the political history of the world? That's basically what you have counting down towards and building towards in Bloodline, and what the ramifications of all of that are. You get to see the early abornings of the First Order, and by the time you get through to the end of the book, you really understand how the Resistance started, why the Resistance started, and most importantly, why Leia is at the head of the Resistance, and why she's called General Leia, no longer Princess Leia or, you know, Senator Leia.
That sounds really cool.
I really enjoyed it. It's got the political overtones that I think Lucas was really wanting to have in the original trilogy, and it works a lot better. You don't get a, you know, so this is how liberty dies to thunderous applause, and I know what Lucas was reaching for with that, and he just didn't quite get it. You have a much better, in my opinion, execution of this kind of backstory and overtone that doesn't get clearly resolved and clearly had a lot going on before we get dropped into the middle of it. There are some great 3PO moments. I hate to say it, but there's good 3PO writing in this. There's a very early gag where they're in a protocol situation and 3PO kind of leans over to Leia and says, you know, these people are really, they're really getting way too hung up on this stuff. And Leia just rolls her eyes herself like, oh God, if 3PO thinks we've gone overboard, we're really around the corner in the rabbit hole at this point. Huh. And I thought that was a great use of the character. I actually think Han Solo is badly used in this book. Hmm. He's mostly not there. This book is also kind of about the end of the Solo family, you know, Han and Leia's marriage and, you know, what happens with Ben. Han only comes in a couple of places, and it's just very gratuitous. I didn't like it, and it's nothing to do with how Claudia writes the character. I mean, it's classic Han in how he talks, but just how the character is brought in and used, and then shuffled off stage again, so the focus can stay on Leia. Just it felt very forced. There's one thing that's interesting about the book is that you have it was brought out that, you know, the director of Star Wars 8 was brought in to make some contributions to the story, and my guess is that his contributions have to do with what Ben was doing in the course of this book. Luke and Ben are completely off camera, they're off doing their own thing, but I kind of think that the revelation or the finding out for Ben that his father is Darth Vader, that was probably a very key moment in his journey to the dark side. And my speculation is that that's going to be something that's talked about a bit in episode 8. That's my guess on that element of it. So,
Well, let me stop you right there. You know, I love the idea that this gets the politics in Star Wars a little bit better than the movies. I'm really glad to hear you say that because, you know, I love a good political drama, right? I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of political dramas on television and the movies. But I never felt like Star Wars was a good venue for that. You know, and starting out the crawl in episode one with the taxation of trade routes are in dispute. You know,
yes.
I mean, come on, what a boring way to start a Star Wars film. But almost any other film, I mean, a film that's more oriented toward politics that might be very, you know, useful information. It just didn't work with Star Wars. So it's great to hear that they're able to flesh the politics out a little bit more.
No, it's great. There's a great character introduced, Senator Castrofo, who is kind of Leia's foil throughout the story. And I don't want to give away what happens with him and how everything winds up. I hope we'll see him again. I'm not confident that we will, but I'm hopeful we'll see him again. And it's nice how his story kind of gets tied up in a very Chekhovian way. There's an almost offhanded thing that he does as a political figure in the beginning of the book that turns out to have a very big ramification for him at the end of the book. And I actually didn't see it coming until it happened. And that's honestly kind of hard to say for me anymore.
that's saying a lot for you, especially. I mean, I know that, you know, that you can forecast things fairly well. And, that really says a lot.
No, it.
I stepped away from my mic for just a second. But did anybody see the on YouTube the Leia political attack ad that came out there?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Based on this story.
Did anybody
see that?
I didn't, but I read about it, and I think that's a fantastic bit of viral marketing for the book.
Yeah, I did see that. And that was a lot of fun. That was very very cool. I like that. The other comment I had on, you know, you mentioned the well. For lack of a better word, I'm not sure if you use the term gratuitous use of Han Solo. I'm wondering, can you have a Princess Leia story without Han Solo?
I actually think they could have done it here. Because the story is about kind of the ending of this phase of Leia's life, where she's the successful senator. And she's married to Han Solo, and she's a mother of this young, you know, Jedi in training, Ben. It almost would have worked better if Han just hadn't been there to really drive home the point that yes, they love each other, but this marriage just it doesn't work. They're in love, but it just doesn't work. I almost think Han was brought in just to drive home in the timeline that he doesn't have the Millennium Falcon at this point.
Yeah. Can't go anywhere.
Well, it sounds like a great read. I actually have the book, and I've read about the first three chapters. So the tone and tenor is certainly feels like Star Wars to me, and I'm enjoying it. So it's I'm really glad to hear that you enjoyed it. Wanted to also point out that Claudia Gray also she's the one that wrote Lost Stars.
Yes,
which I liked a lot, and I think you liked it too.
I did too, and Bloodline's a different book for me in that Lost Stars kind of is playing around the fringes of all the stuff that we know happened, just kind of filling in some gaps or telling stories from a different point of view. This one is very definitely telling a story that's not on the timeline anywhere. It's filling in some important bits of the Star Wars lineage and timeline for us for the first time.
Very cool.
Yeah, Dave, I did want to jump in on there. You mentioned me earlier about female authors. Was it specifically geared towards Leia stories or just in general?
In general, just I was thinking about Leia specifically just because she's the quote-unquote, you know, main female character existing now. Now that you say that, I think there were some Mara Jade novels that were written by women, but since Mara Jade's been erased from the timeline, if you will, I wasn't thinking of those.
Well, I think it's still fair game to talk about some of that stuff, but I know two of them that were pretty prominent in the expanded universe was Karen Travis was one author, and then a very famous author, A.C. Crispin, or otherwise known as Anne Crispin, who I believe wrote the V story from the 1980s, which was a television miniseries.
Was it Karen Travers that wrote a lot about the Mandalorians? I remember there was some sort of controversy with her in writing about the origin story for the Mandalorians, and that there was quite a bit of, she was really upset when they like decreed it to be non-canon, you know. And,
she might have been, she was very involved in the Clone Wars saga, so she might have been part of that. Yeah. Mandalorian. I did not read a lot of the Clone Wars era stuff that was put out there, and there was quite a bit of it.
I think she took some liberty with the origin story for Boba Fett in particular, and was really upset online and tried to stir up a big fury with Lucasfilm when they just decided her stuff wasn't canon.
Yeah.
But I'm sure a lot of authors may have felt that way, but she was very vocal.
No, and they, I don't think Lucas had much of a choice if they, you know, they wanted to come in and advance with a clean slate. I mean, I was rereading some of the Zahn stuff, which I love, and there are so many things in there that are great, and I would love to see in the Star Wars universe again, but the stuff he did with Luke and the Jedi lore very clearly just doesn't even work. Once you get to having the prequel movies, the stuff he's talking about just doesn't work. It didn't unfold that way. They really didn't have a choice but to have to erase everything and start over. Two thumbs way up, bottom line.
All right, two thumbs up for Bloodline. Well, thank you, Dave, for that. That was great, and I'd love to continue this if we can with other Star Wars books that come out or that have been released previously. You know, even the old ones, you know, it would be nice to go back and look at the Zahn books and kind of revisit those. Obviously, it's been a long time since we've read them, but it might be fun to go back and play with those a little bit.
I'm actually reading.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, yeah, I'm actually redoing. I'm not rereading them. I'm listening to them on Audible, and I'm overjoyed to discover this. The Audible books are not actual audio books. They're produced like radio plays. They have different actors doing the voices. There's music cues. There's sound effects. It's an absolute joy to listen to.
And that's the original, the Timothy Zahn trio, Heir to the Empire and those?
Yes, sir.
Oh, very cool.
I want to add to Dave's review there. When you brought that up about other female authors, I mentioned A.C. Crispin or Anne Crispin. Anne Crispin was the one who wrote, I believe, the original Han Solo trilogy back in the late 70s, early 80s, which I do have an original first printing of that, plus wrote multiple short stories for some of the compilation books like Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina and a few others as well. Some really interesting stories, even if it's been discarded, it's not canon anymore, it's now considered legacy. Some great stories that she wrote. She passed away about 3 years ago. Just a brilliant, wonderful, wonderful author. Even her outside of Star Wars writing was just some great stuff. So if you ever get a chance, pick up anything by A.C. Crispin.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah. That's great.
She's done Star Trek novels as well.
Yeah, I believe you're correct on that. I haven't seen her whole biography yet, but I'll have to look into that. I think you're right, though. She did do some Trek novels as well.
Nobody cares about Star Trek.
Oh, bite your tongue, young one.
Bunch of nerds in red shirts.
Have you seen the film Fanboys?
I have.
Fanboys has a great scene with a street fight between Star Wars and Star Trek fans. It's so good.
Well, isn't Fanboys all about Star Wars fans? And there's an actual appearance by William Shatner in that movie?
Yes. Yes.
Am I thinking the same thing?
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah. Yep. I haven't seen it.
Oh.
No idea what you're talking about.
You've seen the trailer a few times. It's worth a watch. And talking about movies, I will throw in here to the review portion of this week's show. I got a chance to take a look at Elstree 1976. Has anyone seen that movie?
I have not had a chance.
This one I do want to see.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, good. Well, it's I found it to be very interesting. It's essentially the story of the extras that were in the original Star Wars film. Jeremy Bullock is interviewed. who of course plays Boba Fett. Paul Blake, who played Greedo. In fact, I've got a portion of the film queued up here. This is Paul Blake talking about an experience he had with a certain famous member of the original crew of Star Wars. So check this out.
Walked out onto this massive soundstage full of sand with this spaceship, which I later found out was the Millennium Falcon up the other end. And thought, this is quite impressive, because, of course, all sci-fi movies in the 60s and 70s were B, C, D, or E movies, you know, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. But this looked, well, this is quite interesting, you know. I thought, oh, well, maybe it's not going to be as terrible as it promised to be. But there's nobody there, except one bloke right in the far corner. And I thought, oh, he's an ASM, he'll know what's going on. So I said, excuse me, my name's Paul, somebody's called me over here to see some guy. Oh, you couldn't get me a cup of coffee, could you? I'm desperate for a coffee. Would you? And he said, yeah, sure. So he went and got me a coffee and came back. And I said, oh, thanks very much. Do you know this guy called Lucas, George somebody or other? He's the director of this. I think there's a movie. He said, I'm George, George Lucas. So I'd made George Lucas go and get me a cup of coffee.
So Paul Blake stumbles onto the set and goes and tells the director, hey, can you give me a cup of coffee? So this movie is filled with little anecdotes like that. There was another piece to this. Let's see if I can bring it up. Of course, one of the more famous Star Wars celebrities that's come out of the original trilogy is David Prowse, who, of course, famously played Darth Vader. He had some interesting things to say. And this is, forgive me, this is a little bit of a longer clip, but I want you to be patient because I think we can talk about it after. This is Dave Prowse talking about and alluding to the fact that his relationship with Lucasfilm and with George in particular in the wake of Star Wars hasn't been very strong. So listen to this.
The thing was is that when Star Wars came out, they basically did... honestly, did everything they possibly could to decry sort of my sort of efforts, as it were. You know, I, as far as they were concerned, I was just another bit part actor, and I was playing this Darth Vader character, who basically they would have been quite happy for him to have been sort of nameless, as it were. But here I am, sort of an actor, sort of who has played a part in a movie. And the part has been accepted by the public as being regarded now as the ultimate screen villain of all time, you see. Is my name that's up on the credits? It's Dave Prowse's Darth Vader, as it were. And I thought, well, I'll put Dave Prowse is Darth Vader on my autograph. And they didn't like it very much. They said, would you mind putting as Dave Prowse as Darth Vader? I said, no. I said, I'll put Dave Prowse is, and it's continued on.
From what I've read over the years about his relationship with Lucasfilm, this is a bit of revisionist history on Prowse's part, because, you know, he was mired in controversy during the filming of Empire Strikes Back, when supposedly Lucasfilm claimed that he leaked the I am your father moment. Have you guys heard this rumor at all over the years?
I have, yes.
Yeah.
I have not, actually.
Yeah, so the story goes that he leaked that information to the press and Lucasfilm clamped down on it as fast and as hard as they could. Nevertheless, it did get out and some outlets carried it, and it was shared. Of course, we didn't have the internet back then, so it wasn't shared widely. But Lucasfilm, naturally, really, really took offense to this and was quite upset with him. I'm going to play the second part of this clip, which is a little bit more spin from Mr. Prowse about how James Earl Jones became to be the voice of the character. Check this out.
I want people to know that it was me that did all the acting. I mean, I did all the action and I did all the dialogue.
I'm tearing this ship apart piece by piece until you find those tapes. Find the passengers of this vessel. I want them alive!
But everybody comes out and said, oh, well, it wasn't you that did the dialogue, was it? And I said, no, I did all the dialogue all the way through the movie. We used to say to George, you know, what are we going to do about the dialogue? Because everything I'm saying is coming through the mask and is no good for reproduction purposes, you know. And he used to say, well, you know, don't worry about it. We're going to the sound studios and re-record all your dialogue at the end of the movie. So I automatically assumed that it was me that was going to go into the sound studio to re-record all my dialogue. And then, of course, what happened was we finished the movie. They chased back to America because they couldn't get all the special effects that they wanted in the UK. And then when they were back in America, they suddenly obviously realized that they hadn't overdubbed than the overdubbing, and it was much obviously cheaper then to employ any voiceover artist rather than fly me all the way over from London to Hollywood just to overdub half a dozen lines or whatever, however much I had. And unfortunately for me, they couldn't have picked a better actor to overdub my lines than James Earl Jones.
So I find it hard to believe that Lucasfilm suddenly realized that they forgot to overdub the lines and had to hire some actor, so they just happened to stumble on James Earl Jones. I just think this doesn't quite line up with some of the things that I've read over the years about this situation. And so I thought it was interesting. It's an interesting part of Star Wars history, and certainly can be told in different ways, and maybe different from, as Obi-Wan might say, from different points of view.
I think you're correct, Steve, on that. I have seen interviews, and I'll have to dig up this and provide links, plus actual magazine articles that I still have, where it talks about them overdubbing James Earl Jones' voice and hiring him to do that job. There's been quotes, I believe, that talk about how kind of silly it sounded with David Prowse's voice in the mask. Whether he was originally hired to do the voice of Vader, they felt that he was just not coming across as that kind of ominous voice that they wanted. He had this kind of high-pitched British accent, obviously, being British, that just didn't strike fear or terror into people. And I think that was from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I've heard the same thing. And it's really interesting to get the actor's perspective. What the overriding sentiment is that, you know, David Prowse was naturally upset, had no idea that it was that his voice would be overdubbed by James Earl Jones, sat down in the theater to watch the movie, and surprise, surprise, it wasn't his voice, and became bitter and let the cat out of the bag with the I'm your father moment. And so it's just really interesting to hear Lucasfilm executives talk about and to read articles from that era while the controversy was going on, and then to hear him 30 some years later, almost 40 years later, talking about it in this film. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard any of the
spoiling stuff too?
Sorry.
Have you guys heard any of the dialogue from David Prowse the undubbed dialogue from David Prowse from the movie? Have you guys heard it?
Yeah, Greg. Steve just played skit or a clip for all of us about 45 seconds ago.
but there's more. There's more. In Greg's defense, there's more than that out there. There's that you can hear quite a bit of it, and it's just so strange to hear this Cockney sort of British.
It's hilarious.
Version. Yeah,
it is so funny. I don't know.
Maybe Greg couldn't hear it because his old ass ears aren't working properly tonight.
Man, he is just throwing that hate pillow at people tonight. Man.
No, I'm holding on to the hate pillow so I can throw shade at you guys.
I dropped out there for a second, so I'm coming a little late to the conversation, I think.
No, that's okay. There's just maybe a 5-second clip in the middle of that interview, but it is hilarious to hear anyone else's voice, let alone this Cockney sort of echoey voice trying to deliver these, you know, iconic lines. It's funny. Good stuff. Well, this movie, you know, I have to say, I'll just wrap this with. You know, I hate to say this, guys. This movie's a little bit boring. It really is. I picked out what I thought were two of the best clips. And there's it's filled with interviews from these these actors that did, that you know, feel like they were on the fringes and didn't realize what they were getting themselves into. On the other hand, you know, they've hit a gold mine with just they're in the background of this shot for 5 seconds in the, you know, in the cantina, and then for the next foreseeable future they can go to any Star Wars convention and, you know, get $10 for their autograph. So it's an interesting phenomenon.
I hate to say,
I hope that's their manager. I was going to say, I hope their manager was smart enough to tell them to take points on the movie instead of just a base pay.
Well, I think all these actors were.
I'm sure they got none of that.
Yeah, no, these actors. A lot of these guys were just hired by the agency that would, you know, fill extras for whatever movie, and they just came in and they did Star Wars, you know, today and some other movie tomorrow, and they didn't really know what they were doing until later when it hit, and they realized what a gold mine they had stumbled onto.
Yeah, this is something I do want to see, and I'll probably wait till it does get to the Netflix or the Hulu or whatever it ends up being on, because I'm sure it'll end up being there. I think I heard the same thing that you're saying, Steve. It's a very interesting story with a lot of uninteresting people.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Kind of like the Wretched Hive.
Lies.
I do want to throw this in there. As much as I appreciate David Prowse and certainly his convention appearances over the past 20, 30 years, there's been other actors that have been inside that suit. In fact, one of the actors who's been credited for most of the action sequences with Vader, mainly the lightsaber battles, was the stunt coordinator, Bob Anderson, which, as much as David likes to complain about being there and not having his voice heard and all that stuff, Bob Anderson seems to be the one that really kind of put forth that dominant Vader lightsaber kind of ominous feeling, like he's powerful feeling that he was. It wasn't Prowse. Prowse was just walking through hallways and sitting in a boardroom and doing that kind of stuff. I thought I'd throw that out there. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. No, although the physical presence of David Prowse, who was a hulking man, a power lifter, a world champion, I think, in weightlifting. I mean, this was just a huge man to fill out that costume. And the way that he walks, I think, is very distinct and sort of defines Vader in a way. You know, when he's striding through the hallways of Princess Leia's ship, when he's walking through Echo Base, you know, it's clearly Darth Vader, and he's got that stride. So, I mean, I think there he definitely had some great moments just from his presence.
Absolutely. I don't deny him that. I just think when he starts to talk about him being denied the voice of Vader, I think there was a reason behind it. I think there was a bigger part of who the team of Vader was when they were creating that character. And he likes to claim it as his own quite a bit, and it kind of bugs me a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's a good example. The character of Greedo. Greedo was played by two different people. At one point, Paul Blake is commonly referenced as the main character of Greedo, but it was also at one point when they were doing reshoots. Here we're going to come back to reshoots. A woman came in and played the part, Maria de Aragon, I believe it was her name. I actually met her at one of the conventions. She filled in for the parts that really needed to be filled in for at the point where he couldn't come back. So you have multiple people playing people inside costumes. Prowse just gets a little bit whiny. That's all. No hate pillow, nothing. I'm just saying he needs to just settle down a little bit.
I say we all give it up for the most memorable portrayal of Darth Vader coming from Hayden Christensen.
I was going to say, I mean, he's a little bit whiny. He is a Skywalker, so...
Yeah. And Scott, just to jump back to the point you were making about the stunt coordinator Bob Anderson doing the lightsaber duels, yes. Am I remembering right that came about because David Prowse lied and said he could do sword fighting and actually had no earthly idea how to do that?
I believe you are absolutely correct on that.
That's hilarious. I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, yeah, I can wield a lightsaber. And then you get in there and you're doing the first thing, and Lucas is just thinking to himself, oh, my God.
Just making the lightsaber noises. Meow, meow, meow.
You know, going back to Hayden Christensen, I can't remember if we've covered this on the show, so I'm sorry if I've asked this question in the past, but, you know, he seems like a guy that's about my size. You know, he's not a 6 foot, you know, 6, 240-pound guy. He's like a, you know, 180-pound slender guy. So when he puts on the suit at the end of episode 3, it looks like he's wearing his dad's jacket or something, you know? Have you guys noticed that? Like the shoulder piece and the chest piece? It's like there's space between it and him.
One thing I heard they did was that they weighted his suit in awkward places to give him an awkward walk. And that was on purpose to make it, you know, this is Vader's first time in the suit. It shouldn't be a natural fit. It should be somewhat awkward. So they, you know, whether they actually weighted the suit or whether that was his acting choice, there was something going on there. They wanted him to be awkward in the suit.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, he just got rebuilt as the Bionic Man. He's got like one nubby arm and a head on his torso, and that's it. They just rebuilt him. They can make him as tall and thick as they want to.
Hmm. Yeah, and I'm going to go even further with this. There is, I think, actual books or some sort of filler material where they talked about once three of his limbs were cut off completely. They talked about how when they reconstructed him in the suit that he was supposed to be bigger than what he was as a human. And so there is that awkward moment, Greg, that you talked about. And Nico, I think you mentioned also just extending the legs and the overall presence. So when he does bust out of the Frankenstein table, there is this weird moment like he's a newborn creature, basically.
A newborn baby giraffe.
Yeah. It's so sweet, so special.
Well, I wasn't talking – actually, I wasn't referring to how he, like, moves or whatever. I'm talking about, like, how the suit fits him. Like, it looks like it's, like, sort of draped on him. He just – he doesn't fill it out the way that a guy like David Prowse would.
Yeah, he's kind of the Muppet Babies equivalent of Darth Vader at that point. Just not quite there.
Well, guys, I've got one last story to share. We're running short on time here, but I've got one last story to share. I wanted to revisit our conversation about Matthew McConaughey, because I know there's one Hivian here who really sort of has a man crush on Matthew. And and Matt actually stepped up and did a funny little bit on SNL. It must have been, 20 years ago, I guess, that SNL did the fake auditions. Kevin Spacey was one of them. Do you guys remember this?
It was beautiful.
So, yeah.
So you mean Matthew McConaughey's bits aren't all funny? I thought they were all jokes and comedies.
So wait a minute. If this was a 20-year-old bit, would Nico have ever seen it at this point, or is it before his time?
I think he was in diapers.
Internet Archive. Dave, get with the 21st century, come on, Dan.
So they had
Didn't they do a round of these right before The Force Awakens came out, though? I know they did the old one with Kevin Spacey doing all the impressions, but didn't they just do one before Force Awakens came out, too, though? Around the time that they did the Matt, you know, what's his name was on, it's escaped me what his name is. I want to say Kylo Ren, but I forget the actor's name. Adam Driver.
Yeah.
Yes. You are
when
correct.
When he was on Sunday, didn't they do a round of these audition?
Well, I think they've done it a couple times. I think did it during the prequels. And then I think they did it. You're right. Around Force Awakens. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong about that. And then they just this last week or the last couple of weeks, they revisited and did another set of auditions. And so we have Dave's favorite actor, Matthew McConaughey, stepping up to try his hand at Lando. Check this out.
Matthew McConaughey? But isn't it time to reunite with Lando Calrissian? Do I have a Lando voice? Han Solo. He's that way. I have a Lando voice.
such a dork.
So that was funny. That actually was McConaughey too, wasn't it?
It was not one of the SNL actors. It was Matthew McConaughey. So I thought that was kind of fun.
Yes, and brief McConaughey is a lot better than rambling monologue McConaughey.
Oh man.
All right. But a very quick and short appearance from John Hamm in that clip too at the very end, which was kind of funny.
Oh, that's right. Let me see if I can cue this up here. That was a great one, actually. He's got a great line that I think I can use in one of our. I wanted to use it. All right.
It's super quick. Yeah, it's super quick though.
Oh, this is good too. Hold on, we got a little bit of the Black Eyed Peas going right into John Hamm here. Check this out.
The Black Eyed Peas as the Cantina Band.
Let's get it, Star Wars. Let's get it, Star Wars in here. Let's get it, Star Wars.
John Hamm.
Put up your space hands, J.J. Abrams.
Put up your space hands, J.J. Abrams.
do kids nowadays know who the Black Eyed Peas are? Just wondering.
I do. That was my generation. I don't know about your grandchildren right now, but my generation knows about it.
Damn, Nico.
Well, talking about old people, it's time for the Very Lonely Luke tweet of the week. It's the Very Lonely Luke tweet of the week.
Red 5 standing by.
Because if there's something to whine about, you can count on Luke.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Even though he's now an old man.
No!
It just isn't fair.
What do you got for us, Greg?
Well, you know, this week there's a lot that's out there. He writes a lot, and I think last week Dave had the comment that was the worst haiku ever, and a lot of these tend to break down into little three-liners. I wanted to hit something this week that epitomized the very lonely Luke. A lot of times it's very depressed Luke, and I almost think somebody should start a separate Twitter account and we can separate those out. But anyway, Very Lonely Luke, tweet of the week this week. Yoda taught me to avoid conflict and be at peace with the universe. He wasn't training me to be a Jedi. He was training me to be a hermit.
Aww. Poor Luke.
Hashtag Jedi life.
Hashtag Xanax for Luke.
So this week, the assignment for the listeners this week, go out and buy a $2,500 bowcaster on the collectible.starwars.com site for Greg Lent of the Wretched Hive.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that. That we should have covered that, and I had that in the show notes and forgot it. But that collectibles.starwars.com, really, really cool stuff. Really expensive beautiful stuff, pieces, but there. Really cool stuff. Yep.
I would be totally cool with any Stormtrooper themed anything. Thank you.
Steve, is that the collectibles? Is that our mutual friend, Chad Workman?
It is our mutual friend, Chad Workman, works on that website, works at Disney Lucasfilm, and sent us a link, and boy, they did a great job rebuilding that site. Kudos to you, Chad, for your part in that. Boy. Really, really good stuff.
Does he work on StarWars.com or is he the collectible side specifically?
He works on StarWars.com, but he had a hand in this collectibles launch.
The collectibles site itself, very well done. Yep. And I really am liking the redesign and a lot of the content that they're putting on StarWars.com. A lot of really good content that's on there now. So go out and spend a whole day and get sucked down that internet echo chamber.
Oh yeah, they've relaunched that site in the last year or so, and it is a great source. They're positioning themselves, I think, to be the source of Star Wars news, which it should be. StarWars.com. Check it out. And while you're on StarWars.com, you can also check us out on Facebook.com/Wretched Hive Podcast. You can email us, wretchedhive@yahoo.com. Leave us a voicemail, 562 562- 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. You can tweet at us at RetchHivePod. Or search iTunes and leave us a review on iTunes, please. Five stars, one star, any stars. We don't care. Just leave us a review. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. We'll see you in a couple weeks. May the force be with us all. Guys, I'll let you take it out.
Yum dub!
Chewbacca mom, we'll see you next week.
I'm a happy Chewbacca mom!